And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this snowy Thursday, December 19th. Well, kids, you wanted a white Christmas. Guess what? You got it. And a little bit of snow, about 3 to 5 inches across the FM area. Bridget, how much are you thinking? Did you get a chance for any measurements? I saw there was some heavier pockets of snow up towards Mayville, Hunter, stretching out towards Findlay and down towards Valley City.
Well, because the state's pretty large, we have some of that. I'm at about 4 inches here, but north of Devil's Lake is reporting 11 up towards the Drayton area. I've talked to folks up there this morning, also looking at probably 8 to 9 inches in Drayton. So we're seeing quite a bit of snowfall in the northern areas, which is not surprising. They were in the heavier bands to begin with, and winds haven't been out of control yet. South Dakota is telling me that they are seeing some of the heaviest breezes, you might say, out of anyone. So it's been interesting to watch who's gotten what out of this today.
And you know, typically with these clipper systems, you get these little banding of the snow, and where you get under one of those bands, that's where you can get the localized higher amounts, while areas of, let's say, South Fargo only got 3.5 inches. Areas out, like I said, Valley City up through Hunter and Mayville might have picked up over 6 in some areas. So you get that with these clipper systems. And, well, I'll tell you what, after the system passes by this afternoon, the winds are going to ramp up, as you were talking about, Bridget. And that's going to lead to some blowing snow as we head into the late afternoon hours, as we're looking at temperatures falling off into the lower teens, and those winds out of the north at about 15 to 30 and gusty. So those north or those east-west roads are going to see reduced visibility, blowing and drifting on those. The winds should calm down towards midnight. We'll see the skies start to clear out as high pressure builds in. We'll drop down to a low, pretty close to 10 below. And then as we head into your Friday, a little more sunshine, light winds, highs around 10 above. And then maybe a snow shower or two Friday night, not a big deal. That's kind of on the cusp of slightly warmer air pushing into the area with highs in the upper teens on Saturday. We'll be in the upper 20s on Sunday, maybe a light snow shower Sunday night with highs again on Monday around the upper 20s. And all Christmas week, we will be, outside of Monday, we'll be in the 30s all week. So that's great news. For holiday travelers in and around the area, we should have quiet weather and temperatures above normal. Just watch for that refreeze and freeze on some of the roadways with the snow melt, and that refreezes at night. But no big storms on the horizon through Christmas outside of what we've got going through today. And our next chance of any significant storm, according to the LRC, would be towards the end of the month into the first few days of October. How about January?
Well, as we look at the road report right now, 2/3 of North Dakota is covered under snowy highways.
Right.
To the west, especially from west of Minot, west of Mandan, a lot of ice out that direction. So for those who are getting ready to start some holiday travel, you know, with Easter, Christmas in the middle of the week, you've got folks that are getting ready to roll here shortly. So be paying attention to those changing conditions. They may not have had the vast amount of snowfall, but they have had some freezing drizzle and so forth and are seeing some icy roads. So take it easy. As always, if you are on the road and you have a weather and road report for us, we'd be happy to take them. You can give us a call at 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line. And you can send us emails, excuse me, at weather@flagfamily.com. Looking forward to seeing all of those from you. So thank you. That seems awesome.
Yeah, no doubt. And if you want to email your snow reports for your particular town or city, shoot me an email, weather@flagfamily.com, or you can email it to ag@flagfamily.com as well. We like to pass along those snow reports to the National Weather Service. That helps them kind of put in those snow map totals, and it helps them out for future forecasting as well, to see exactly where the heavier snow bands did fall. I'm seeing reports on Department of Roads here. Quite a few accidents. We've got 3 so far just recently here in the FM area on 29 and 94. So kind of slow your roll. Looking out the window, the interstate system just looks wet at this point. But again, as we get those winds to ramp up later this afternoon, that's when we're going to see that blowing snow and probably more slick conditions redeveloping, even on the interstates as well. Also, you'll want to be listening throughout the show. because we are going to have one of our qualifiers today for our wonderful Las Vegas trip to the Sphere. So it's a great, great, great prize, and we'll be qualifying somebody sometime on today's show. Won't let you know when, but you'll listen for that sounder, and then...
And go ahead, Bridget. And do remember, I just got a cough drop in just in case, but do remember that Desperado Vegas Dream Vacation is presented by American Security and Gate, and it's also brought to you by Frontier Airlines and Kingpins. Kingpins is hosting the qualifying party on Wednesday, January the 8th, so you'll want to be there for that. And this trip includes a round-trip airfare for two on Frontier Airlines from Fargo to Vegas, a hotel stay, two tickets to see the Eagles at the Sphere. That will be on Saturday, January 25th, so make sure you can go to the concert. And then $500 in spending cash. So it's a total of a $5,000 value for folks who are wanting to sign up. Now, we've been doing qualifying stops, places that you can go to. One was just yesterday, and Monday, December 30th, there will be another. So this coming Monday, you'll want to mark your calendars to go to happy hour at Kingpin Social from 3 to 5 o'clock so that you can make sure to get qualified for that trip.
See,
many, glad you'll be a part of it.
Many ways to get qualified. Have you been out there, Bridget? I heard it's a phenomenal event center there.
Been to Vegas a handful of times, but not to that particular event center.
Okay.
One of the neatest times to be in Vegas is January during the Consumer Electronics Show. That's held annually. It is just a highlight of unique and exciting items that could be coming to the future. You know, in years past, things like the iPhone was introduced there. Actually, last year, one of the top contenders for best of show was John Deere and some of the equipment that they show. So when you think about what happens at the Consumer Electronics Show, it's not just about that device in your car or in your home. It really can affect you when it comes to your job and so much more. And one of the things I've talked about in the morning shows this week is a robotic dog that senses fire ant nests. And the reason that's important is fire ants will swarm, and they are so vindictive, whether it's to a person, to wildlife, to livestock. And so if you tap the nest, they just immediately go nuts. Well, it makes it a little hard to do effective pesticide applications. So this dog, it's a robotic dog. It uses AI generation, and its smarts are AI. So it can go find the nests and let people know where they're at, so applications can be made to eliminate the nest. I'm thinking, if it's a dog, wouldn't it be possible to put a bladder in that dog? So all it has to do is tap the nest, then step ahead and lift its leg, and that could be the application to eliminate the fire ants.
That could, yeah.
All in one.
That's, well, see, here, now you've got an idea. Let's patent that.
It could work.
You know?
It could work.
It could.
I look forward to the possibilities of that happening. So, yes, a listener note here who says, those wet highways that you're seeing out there statewide, as the snow's starting to melt, we are seeing some road conditions deteriorate. So thanks for listeners who are paying attention and just saying that, hey, things don't look awesome outside of
right.
the Fargo-Moorhead area right now. So please keep that in
yeah.
mind.
And also, I mean, as temperatures drop, we're going to see mm-hmm. a lot of refreeze on anything that has thawed out just a bit. I mean, temperatures right now in the upper teens, and we'll continue to see them falling. Like I said, once we get the winds to ramp up and we get the blowing snow over the roads, it might look wet, but it's probably going to be pretty icy later this afternoon, as well as it is now. So conditions won't get any better even after the snow winds down here over the next 45 minutes or so. Still a little light snow shower activity, but most of that is on the light side. So a little additional accumulation, it'll be less than a half inch across the area. So that's the good news. We need the moisture, but after this system departs, like I said, not a whole lot on the horizon, which is good for holiday travel. Again, if you're having any holiday travel plans right around the Christmas time, I think we're going to be okay this year. It looks pretty nice out.
We'll see what things do. If you were planning on keeping the extra items in the redneck cooler outside on the deck, it might be a little bit warm for the frozen things, but your refrigerated items can still go outside.
So that's right.
It's way to keep the wine chilled before the in-laws arrive.
That's right.
So,
and Bridget, I've had numerous requests. Where is our LRC calendar at? I know. And I've been hesitant to put it together, and there's been a couple reasons why. And after talking with Gary last night, we kind of came to the – so I was thinking one thing. He was thinking one thing. And this is late this year for the cycle to be set, but we finally have a cycle length set. So I will be putting this our calendar together over the holidays. I know I've gotten a few emails in terms of travel, and if I haven't answered your email, shoot me another one. I'm pretty sure I got to 99% of them. I just don't want to miss any of those for people that are traveling anywhere in the Midwest for the upcoming holiday season. So we should have that put together over the holidays and have that out shortly. So that's good news there. It took a little longer than expected this year. But we want it accurate. Okay, we don't just want to throw a 7 day, because we had it narrowed down to like a 7 day span. But if you're narrowing down these storm systems to a day or two, that makes a huge difference in terms of travel. So now that we finally got that narrowed down, we can start putting together that calendar, and we'll get that out ASAP.
Excellent. People have been asking. In fact, I had some questions about it just last night. So, well, folks, one of the things I also saw last night, and if you're watching on our live stream, which you can on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV, please do. I'm not sure if anybody else, as a former dairy farmer's daughter, remembers getting Hordes Dairymen as a kid. And that was, it's one of the magazines. The best part about this, and I'm going to try to get it in the camera pretty well here, is it's a wonderful piece of artwork on their cover this year. And so when you look at it, you can see the big round barn in the back. You can see the old-fashioned Christmas tree with the tinsel hanging off of it, as well as garland. And four little critters looking in the window that looks to me like a brown Swiss, a Holstein, and a Jersey. And I just thought that this cover shot was pretty cool, especially because today is all about livestock. And our guest today is Dr. Emily Dex. She is a veterinarian at the Ashley Vet Clinic in Ashley, North Dakota. I talked a little bit about her on the morning shows today, saying we were going to talk about the problem with the Mexican screwworm and what it's doing to livestock coming across the border. I got a lot of laughs.
That's a drink.
I just want to clarify, it's not the worm in the bottom of a tequila bottle. Okay. It's completely different. It is a parasite. And we're going to talk about that with Dr. Emily Fox next. And a welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Today is a fantastic day all about livestock. And again, if you are watching today on our live stream, which is on Facebook, YouTube, or Acres TV, you get the chance to see us visit, not just hear us. And I have with us today Dr. Emily Fox. She's at the Ashley Veterinary Clinic in Ashley. And Emily, everywhere I go, more and more people know who you are. So that 90-mile radius around your clinic must be growing.
Hi, nice to see you again.
Good to see you too. In fact, I was at the South Dakota Cattlemen's Association meeting in Pierre last week, and I had at least three other people say, oh, you know Emily too? Isn't she awesome? So your reputation continues to spread.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. One of the things I asked you about before we got on air today was the New World Mexican screwworm. And I'm looking for some details from you as to what this is, how invasive it really is. I've had to tell people it's not the worm at the bottom of a tequila bottle. What kind of background can you give us right now? Oops, did we lose Emily? Did she freeze up on us?
I guess she doesn't want to give us any information on it. Oh, well, you got to love live radio.
Yes, I'll text her real quick just to make sure we can get her connected again. And that is no problem at all. But there's a number of things that we've got going on considering livestock right now. And that's just one of them. But also, I think with Dr. Emily, we can talk about what's going on with winter plans, because, you know, we're going to see more snowfall. It's going to be colder out. How do we keep some of those animals better protected through the winter months will be helpful. So that's just one thing. Let me just drop a message to Dr. Fox. I think she'll be along shortly.
I'm sure she'll be right back with us. Want to run over some snowfall totals as long as we have a chance here, Bridget. We're just getting more snowfall totals in. Out in Laverne, we're getting reports of 5 inches, which is kind of where that heavier snow band was. Pillsbury, 6 inches. Let's see, Hendrum, Minnesota, checking in with 5 inches, just up the road from Fargo. South Fargo reporting 3.5 inches. And areas out into Clay County, reporting generally about 3 inches around the Holly area. So, for the most part, like we were saying, about 3 to 5 inches across the area, with more up towards like the Devil's Lake area, where some areas, as you were reporting there, Bridget, just north of Devil's Lake, picking up close to 8 to 10 inches of snow there. So we do have
there's plenty of it. Yes.
Yeah, we do have Dr. Emily back. So, Dr. Emily, nice. You froze up on us there for a little bit.
I'm so sorry. I think the weather actually may have frozen our internet
right,
a little bit.
Probably.
I switched to my cellular, and hopefully we'll be all right. So you were asking about World Spruce.
Yes, yes. Please help with that, because the more questions I get, the more confusion there is, I think, because I don't know enough about it. I know you do. And then also maybe a little, we can talk a little bit about what's been going on from a national perspective as we've seen livestock imports maybe shut down because of this.
Sure. So I've actually never heard it referred to as Mexican screwworm before. And I wouldn't really consider it a Mexican problem, even though it's coming in from Mexico currently. And the reason that I say that is primarily because, while Mexico did have screwworm, so did we up until actually we eradicated it in the early 80s, although most of the eradication was done during the late 60s. But this was actually just a New World problem in general. It was all over what they would call the New World. So North, South, Central America, it's primarily a warm weather area issue. So I don't think it was ever a Canadian issue, although I don't know a lot about that. But screwworm was successfully eradicated. I'm not entirely clear. I'm hardly an expert on screwworm because it is more of what they consider a foreign animal disease. But from what I understand, screwworm has been fairly eradicated from most of Mexico for quite a while as well, and most of it has harbored in Guatemala, and even there they have been eradicating it. So I think there's probably been a lot more movement of animals lately, which might account for where we're seeing it coming through from Mexico. Screwworm is just a really nasty fly with a really gross virus. We used to think of blowflies. They're actually very similar. The fly will land on a cow or another animal and will actually lay eggs in the wounds, and kind of not, the larva will gnaw at the cow and then come back out, and they'll also reproduce in there. So it's incredibly painful. You have bugs gnawing holes in, chewing on you, and then subsequently having their babies inside you. Humans can get it rarely, but generally it's just a mammal thing. It's usually animals that can't get it off, can't scratch their backs, essentially. And it is very common in cattle amongst other animals in certain countries. It's the Dominican Republic still has it. Haiti still has it. We've had isolated outbreaks in the States. There was an outbreak in the Florida Keys. I think it was around the time, a little after I graduated school, maybe 17, 18. There were some deer that had it. They did successfully get it back under control through use of macrocytic lactones, so things like ivermectin and duramectin. And then they also sometimes will use dips, organophosphate dips, which are really, really gross, like fly repellents and fly treatments that you actually dip the animals in. It is still definitely a problem in parts of South America, but we've been very fortunate in getting it under control in this country. And the control program was actually really cool. So during the mid-40s, around the World War II, there was a lot of work done on radiation and what radiation can do that is actually helpful. One of the things is what they call sterile insect technique. So sterile insect technique involves using radiation to render male flies sterile and then releasing them so that they outcompete fertile males. And essentially, all of these females get bred. They have larvae, so they don't go get bred by other insects, but they don't actually produce offspring that are viable. And so essentially you end the line. And because these animals have such a limited lifespan and because they reproduce so quickly, this is actually a very efficient way to get rid of a lot of parasites and a lot of bugs, including these types of flies. And that's early technology. We used to do a lot of it in the States, then it got moved to Mexico. And then as things have been eradicated, there's still quite a program, I believe, in Panama. Some of this is US funded because if screwworm does come back into this country, and if it were to become endemic, i.e. if we just had no control over it, it would be close to $1 billion economic impact is what it's. So it's really important to keep it out of here. It sounds like there have been some isolated incidents of it getting into southern Mexico by the Guatemala border. This is certainly concerning. Don't get me wrong, I am concerned because once it gets into wildlife vectors can spread it all over very quickly.
Okay.
However, even if it were to come back to the United States, it does seem like we have good ability to control it. I think that they did the right thing by shutting down imports of Mexican cattle until we can figure out how predominant it is in Mexico and they can get it back under control. Certainly that has a trade and economic impact in Mexico, as well as an impact on the price of beef in the store here. But I do think that that's probably a necessary evil, unfortunately. And long term, mm-hmm. I do think that these control methods have been shown to work for nearly 75 years. And I do think that if we needed to implement them again, that is something that we could do and we would be able to get this under control.
So, Dr. Emily, I've got a number of questions for you, and we're going to hit the bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, there's some things I want to ask in addition about this new world screwworm, such as, let's just review one more time. This was the blowfly larvae that is in an open wound on an animal that the larvae continue to attack the animal. So let's clarify that again, just one more time. Then also, can not only cattle be affected, but perhaps sheep? Is that why we've gone to sheep dips over the year? And maybe explain what a sheep dip is. And then, of course, could humans ever be affected? So let's talk about those things when we return with Dr. Emily Fox from the Ashley Veterinary Clinic. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this snowy day. Please make sure you're letting us know what's going on for weather and road conditions where you are. You can be sending us emails, ag@flagfamily or weather@flagfamily.com. And the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line is always open at 701-293-9000. Our guest today is one of our favorites, Dr. Emily Fox from the Ashley Veterinary Clinic. We've been talking about the new world screwworm, which is confirmed in Mexico. And just to recap, there was a little bit of static on the line when you said this, Emily, but it's the blowfly larvae that lays its eggs in a wound in the animal, and then the larvae is what becomes the parasite. Is that correct?
Pretty close. So it's like a blowfly. It used to get confused with a blowfly up until about the 30s or 40s, I think. And then they discovered it is different, but it looks like a blowfly. It's a larva that looks exactly like a blowfly, but it's okay. Not, but they have a different name. I don't even know what they call them. I suppose they call them something different in South America anyhow. And there's a very long scientific name that I will not try to say because I'm going to butcher it. but they look very similar to a blowfly. They're about the size of a housefly. And they'll go for wounds. Sometimes they'll make wounds, but a lot of the time they'll actually go for an open wound. So, you know, you'll see them in areas like surgical sites. Certainly it's something where if you worked in, say, the Dominican Republic and I was doing veterinary work and I'd done a C-section on a cow, it would be a major concern to me that essentially one of these flies would go and lay larvae in that wound and those larvae would start eating the wound for nutrition, make more babies in the wound, crawl around in the skin and the subcutaneous tissues, and make the animal really uncomfortable. It's an incredible, it is when you think about, you know, when you say something's crawling in my skin, like that's what these animals are feeling. It's terrible.
So when you mentioned, we've talked specifically about beef animals, beef cattle being affected. Would this also potentially affect sheep? And is that why, you know, I look back, like you said, through the 40s and the 50s, where it was a very common practice and still today to have dip tanks for sheep. Would that be the case, why we had them?
So sheep can also get fly strike from other types of flies that behaves very similarly. So yes, dip tanks and sheep dipping is a very effective way to try to control screwworm, but there's also a lot of other fly and fly larva striking flies that you would get that would be a reason to dip your sheep. So just because your neighbor says that they're going to use a sheep dip or somebody in Texas says that does not mean that they secretly have New World screwworm. There are a lot of other things that can be controlled that way, including New World screwworm. You might change what you put in the dip a little bit, but yes, dipping would be effective. And that's part of why a lot of even, you know, pre-1980s in the U.S., there were a lot more dipping facilities like down in Texas, you know, on feedlots and on sheep feedlots as well. But pretty much any warm-blooded animal can get this. I don't think that the worms are particularly concerned about what they're burrowing into as long as it's warm flesh. They don't go for reptiles or anything like that, snakes. What they will do is they're not very common in people, but I think that's primarily because people generally, you know, cover open wounds. We're more likely to wear clothing. We're more likely to, like, disinfect or get these things out. But it can happen in humans. Certainly, I wouldn't necessarily call it zoonotic. I wouldn't be worried about the cattle giving it to you, although there's certainly a replicating host. You know, it is something that like an insect would give you. But theoretically, if I were closely cohabitating with animals that had screwworm, say if I was a somebody who was, you know, living very close to my beef cattle in one of these nations that has an endemic screwworm problem where it is everywhere. And I had recently had surgery or had some sort of open festering wound and couldn't care for it. Yes, it is very possible that I would end up with a screwworm infection, but it is pretty uncommon in humans.
And Emily, we've got an email question, and he said, pardon me that you know, earlier in the program, a little bit of your audio cut out. But he was wondering, does weather have any impact on this? In other words, if we had a hard freeze that made it all the way down to the Gulf Coast, would this not eradicate it, but slow it down at all?
So I'm certainly not an expert. I'm not an entomologist, which is a really fancy word for bug doctor. I've met a few that are really cool guys and girls. But in this case, I believe it would at least slow it down because there was some evidence that one of the things that helped knock it back when we were trying to knock it back in the U.S. was a very cold winter in Florida because they used to have some issues with it in that area. So certainly I think a cold winter would help. Not that anybody really wants a cold winter, but if you're looking for silver lining reasons to be happy that it's really cold out, maybe that's a good one. I don't think it's going to be a huge problem in North Dakota because it probably won't overwinter. I think we could see it, you know, come up with a group of animals, run around a little bit, but I don't, from what I've read, I don't believe that it would overwinter, which would be very good unless it were to somehow become more virulent or find a way to, develop some sort of resistance to cold, but there's no evidence of that.
Okay.
So, Emily, I ran across this article. Actually, I referenced Hordes Dairyman earlier in the show, and this was something that was brought up in there. And they were talking about a calf born with a large lump in the middle of its head, and it felt soft, full of fluid. Calf seems fine. The picture looks like this, if you can, and it talks about the embryonic skull may fail to close. Is this common to see in a calf, whether dairy or beef or anything like that? Can that happen very often?
I have never seen it in a calf, but I have seen hydrocephalus, which is where the brain is full of fluid and the brain becomes too big. Hydrocephalus calves usually don't live because their brains are kind of fluidy and not full of the matter that should be in them. When it comes to a skull not closing, I mean, if I remember correctly, even humans can have that, even just, you know, open fontanelles and beyond. So certainly it's something that during embryologic development, the covering over the brain develops much later than the brain and could develop incorrectly. I have seen a lot of other kind of random defects. The good news is things like that are rarely hereditary and generally are just random chance. So usually just because you have one doesn't mean that you're going to have more.
Okay, that's good to know. As we get kind of down towards the last, you know, 5 minutes or so that we're together, winter's now coming. We've got colder temperatures. We've got snowfall. What are some things that you're seeing your ranchers paying special attention to right now, whether it's with beef animals, sheep, horses? What are they doing to make sure everybody's taken care of for the winter months?
Sure. So I think one of the most important things this time of the year, especially, is nutrition. A lot of these animals are getting fairly close to being in their last trimester before they calve. So their nutritional needs are decently high. And certainly this is a time when you want to be thinking about the quality of feed that you're feeding, sometime that you want to be thinking about your forage quality as well. A lot of people are also thinking about calving already, even though for a lot of people it's probably 3 to 4 months away. But some people start things with their cows earlier to prepare for calving, whether that's changes in nutrition. If you have a coccidiosis problem, a lot of people will start either a decox or a rumensin regimen now on the calves. The reason for that is a lot of people don't realize that they think every disease is in their ground, which it can be to some extent, but a lot of these things actually end up in kind of low tolerable levels in the cows. And certainly that can be the case with coccidia, where the replicating host is primarily the cow. They don't get sick, but they tend to be the shedders and they tend to shed it to the calves. And so doing things like coccidia prevention by controlling it within the cow herd can be very, very effective. And certainly there's some vaccines that you want to do the same thing with, that we're doing all these things now to the cows, but for the calves' benefit. So giving the cows their kind of prepartum vaccinations. And so people are starting to do that. People are preg checking, trying to make sure they're not feeding open cows through the winter and getting them out of the yard before they have calves on the ground, and then also brucellosis vaccinating if they still choose to do that. Some people are doing that as well. And we're seeing we're seeing a fair amount of people having some sick calves this year. There's been, unfortunately, a lot of weird up and down weather. I find for calves generally, especially post-weaning, if it stays cold, it's great. If we have warm weather, it's great. But this up and down and foggy weather that we've had, at least in this area, has been pretty hard on some of them. And so we're certainly trying to get that under control as well.
And that's going to be the outlook, too, for the rest of spring, the rest of winter into spring, Emily, is a large range of up and down temperatures. When we get these cold snaps, they'll last for a couple of weeks, and then we rapidly warm up again. So unfortunately, we'd like a little more tranquility for the newborns. But yeah, not looking like it, unfortunately, through spring.
That's good to know. I really do think that it's important to be cognizant of the weather. The other thing that we've seen a little bit of already is the simple things like water tanks freezing and people not realizing it in time, or water shutting off. We had a power outage at my house yesterday. So just little things like that, they seem like, you know, it's one thing if you live in town and your tap doesn't work and you can't take a shower. Don't get me wrong, that's not fun either. But when you have hundreds and hundreds of cows that need to drink, that's a major undertaking. It's not like you can just go to the grocery store and buy a couple bottles of water and you're good. So it's a pretty big deal. And certainly those types of things can be big. The other thing is people are starting to turn their heaters back on in their tanks. One thing to always consider if it seems like your animals aren't going up and drinking is remembering to maybe either put your hand in the tank if you're super brave, or maybe don't do that, but go up with a voltage meter or call an electrician, because stray voltage is a real thing where the tanks, you know, because of the heater, the electricity can essentially arc through the tank and sometimes can be zapping your animals like an electric fence and keeping them away from water. Stray voltage can, you know, kill animals, not usually from the voltage itself, but by keeping them from the water tank. And so if none of your animals are going up for water, whether you have horses or cows or whatnot, all you should really want to check that water tank and make sure that there's not a stray voltage issue this time of the year.
Boy, that's a great reminder, because as you're chopping ice out of tanks, if anything can happen, right? Those defects with the winds we've had, if you have brittle wires, if they're exposed, those can break off or somehow break the insulation. And so that can cause that stray voltage. And if I'm not mistaken, water consumption per head goes up quite a bit as animals try to keep themselves warm. Would that be correct?
That's true. And also this time of the year, we're feeding mostly stored feeds, which have a very low water content. When you compare the needs of an animal on pasture, even if it's hot out, they're eating grass that's, you know, a large portion water. And suddenly you go to dry hay and dried feeds, and you really do need a lot more liquid. Cows' rumens are super liquidy, and it's important to the fermentation, to the microbes in there, as well as just to their overall cellular hydration. So yes, there definitely can be pretty high water needs this time of the year. And that can be true for horses as well. People with horses should be really conscious that horses that go without water, especially if their tanks freeze over, it's not just about dehydration. A lot of them can get what's called an impaction colic. So their feces can dry out within their intestines, and then they can't pass it. And some of those can be passed by giving them mineral oil, water, those kind of things via a tube into their gastric system. But if that doesn't work, they're either surgical or they are the end of the life for a lot of horses. So it is really important to make sure your horses have water as well. It's not just about, oh, well, they're not working hard, they're not sweating, they're not going to get dehydrated. It can be things as simple as being impacted, and that can end their life.
Ooh, that's a great reminder. So, Emily, thanks for joining us today. You are a fabulous contribution to what we talk about here when it comes to livestock. So thank you to Dr. Emily Fox of the Ashley Veterinary Clinic in Ashley, North Dakota.
Thanks, Emily. Have a Merry Christmas.
You too.
Thanks.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to recap weather. We'll have a couple of ag headlines to go over, and I think we might have to round up a qualifier coming up here shortly for our trip out to Vegas. We'll have more on that coming up after the break. All right, that's the sounder. So we are going to take lucky caller number 7. Caller number 7, you will register yourself for that wonderful trip out to Vegas to the Sphere. And what a trip it would be, too. Hello, caller number 1. Try again real quick. This caller 2, a little quick on the fingers. Try again. Caller 3, thanks. Try again. Caller 4, almost. Again, we need 7. Try again. Caller 5, oh, so close. Try again. This is caller 6. Ah, oh, sorry. And who do we have on line 3?
Harry.
Harry. Congratulations, buddy. You're caller number 7. Have you been out to the Sphere before?
No, I have not.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it should be a good concert, and I've heard a lot of great that Sphere is supposed to be just unbelievable for special effects and whatnot. So you are going to qualify then for that trip. We'll put you on hold here, Harry, and our producer, Addison, will get all the information he needs from you.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Harry. All right, so Harry is qualifying for our wonderful trip out to Vegas, and again, we still have a little ways to go for that through just before the holidays here. So be sure to be listening. We'll have more chances to qualify, and what a trip, Bridget. Like I said, I've never been out there to the Sphere either. I've had friends that have gone out there, and they said it's unbelievable. So
it really is, and yeah. People talk – based on everyone's Snapchats, from what I've seen, it's pretty cool. At least those are the ones that they've been sending off to me. So, and don't forget, this is sponsored by Frontier Airlines, Kingpins, and others. So thanks to all of those sponsors as well.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, let's hit on some ag topics. We got a couple of minutes left, and if we have time, we'll recap the weather.
Okay, that sounds awesome. All right, so a couple of other things that are going on right now. First of all, there's more optimism in the beef industry, and that is reported because of a State of the Beef Industry survey. The result found that respondents were pretty optimistic about what's been going on. At least 65% of beef producers think, wow, this looks good right now. And that's in light of higher beef prices due to our supply being slightly lower. We currently have the lowest amount of beef on the hoof that we have had since the 1960s. And more than 59% of respondents said they plan to add a family member to their operation. There could be children returning to the operation, or maybe partnerships, in-laws, so much more. So we think that this is a positive note right now. Senior Vice President for Animal Protein Analysis for Rabo Research says this industry could really experience a longer transition period due to some of the unprecedented risk that's going on out there. So let's keep an eye on those things. Earlier this morning, I talked about the potential aid package that could be coming to farmers through Congress. Throughout the morning, we've heard, and even late yesterday, we've heard more about the fact that right now, Elon Musk and Donald Trump future Vice President Vance are pushing back a little bit, saying maybe we don't need to spend all this money. So we're going to see where that lands us as we try to make these stopgap measures happen, because the government is potentially into a shutdown by Friday with the opportunity to, if we could extend these things, could operate till March. So let's see what they look like.
And
meanwhile, go ahead.
No, hopefully they don't just keep kicking the can down the road. That seems to happen every stinking year.
It's all we've been doing right now. But speaking of kicking the can down the road, don't do it. Slow down. Roads are covered in snow, and I'm seeing some reports that they're getting a little bit more icy as well.
Yeah, and we're getting more snow reports in. We're getting more snow reports in as well, with the heaviest being just to the north, Hillsboro over towards Findlay, 6 inches there. So that goes kind of right through the Mayville area, 4 inches out towards Jamestown, and just north of Valley City, 6 inches checking in there. So we kind of escaped the worst of it here in the FM area. We only picked up anywhere between 3 to 5 inches. Most of it was in that 3 to 4 inch range. And we still have some light snow showers on radar stretching north of between Hillsboro and Grand Forks. Those are moving southward. So those will be entering the FM area between about 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock. Not much additional accumulation, half inch or less, but watch those roadways this evening with blowing snow. So for Bridget, myself, want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show's coming up next.